But so just to get back to this, I'm selfishly asking this, like, do you,
all about because, the virality?
Yeah, because you put out a lot of stuff, and yeah. I'm just curious if you feel like you're very good at predicting what's going to be interesting.
No, and almost no one is. It's still completely a crapshoot. We had no idea that the Seamus thing would do what it did. It's just it's still not even an art, much less a science.
We find the same things. You know, we have a daily e-newsletter we have to put out. So sometimes on Friday, you find something and you're like, it'll go out on Monday. It'll be fine. You bury it down towards the bottom. It fills the space, and it takes off. And you're like, what the heck? This was something we probably weren't even going to use this. So you really can't predict. Mm. And it's around timing. It's around what other topics are making the news at that time. That
so
really has a huge
influence. Get,
mm-hmm.
you know, get experts to say, wait a minute, someone retweeted this mm-hmm. or mentioned it on the Facebook page. So we got a big jump on something about glyphosate that we wrote on. And it was just, what's going on? And it was a commentary even. It wasn't an article. And we found out that it was on the Facebook page of Aaron Brockovich.
That'll do it.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
For better or for worse.
We had a question right here.
Yeah, I had a question that follows a little bit on what you've just been talking about, which sort of has to do with how far you can go in explaining how complicated something is. The few times I've been interviewed, I've felt like I wanted to make sure the journalist understood the dimensions and the nuances of the issue. But after the interview, I realized that I'd probably gone on too far in this way. And I think one approach to that is what you suggested, Jason, which is to have in mind some talking points, practice a little bit how you can explain your research or what the topic is. I mean, take a topic like food insecurity, for example. You have to have a little preparation in order to settle on what are the key features of that you want to communicate that maybe you think people haven't really appreciated. And these other issues of trade-offs, and if you're going to talk about benefit, you need to talk about cost and so forth. These are things. So I don't know, to the journalists on the panel, do you have any tips for how someone who's being interviewed should, you know where to stop in terms of getting into the complexities of things?
I think that's the journalist's responsibility. Not you shouldn't worry about it. I mean, you should state to the journalist that I can back up this point. It's a little complicated. Do you want me to go further? But the journalist will. It's a very common challenge for the journalist. And the journalist can sometimes say, I want to hear about it. It's not going to go into the article, but it's going to make me smarter as I talk about it. Or talk to me about it. I could put it in a sidebar for people, but I won't, demand that every reader have to go through it. Or the journalist will say, we can just assume that anyone who's interested will go and look at your work, we'll put a link onto your work and find out the details.
As I mentioned previously, we go about it a couple different ways. So we do publish technical papers, and every once in a while, if we happen to forget the references on that, or we just put the references online, we get calls because our readership wants to know all the technical details, all the research that's been, went into this this paper. So we have that reader base. But on the other side, when we're doing more of a news story, we aren't going to probably get as in-depth in all that technical stuff. Now, sometimes we will if we're not comfortable with, if the press release seems too fluffy and we're not confident that we're getting the whole story, we will say, please send us the research paper. And we do have people on staff that go through research papers all the time, so they know what they're looking for and they know how to validate that. And sometimes we'll pull from the paper. Instead of quoting you, we'd say according to the paper or according to the work that's been done.
I would say I do try to make a concerted effort to give short answers first, because I find when I ramble on, the last things I said are less careful than the first things I said. And that's particularly true if you're doing a radio interview there, that you do have, we're not used to being stopped by our students, but so we're just not accustomed to doing that. So thinking of short ways to say things is, I think, something you can practice.
And at least when I, in terms of thinking, whenever I try to present my, discuss work that I've co-authored and things, is just, what am I comfortable saying about this? You know, so as an example, with, you know, paper comes out, look, and we have the bounds on the estimate of the effect of SNAP on food insecurity. So I don't think anybody really wants to know how we address measurement issues and selection issues, but I was comfortable saying it leads to a 20% decline in food insecurity, even though that is probably nuanced between 20 and 50, but just whatever, at least that's my perspective on it. Whatever I'm comfortable summarizing my research, I'm fine saying that.
So I want to add something because the time is about 5 more minutes, and I have a question for you rather than you questioning us, because I want to write about stuff, and I'm looking for expertise, and I'm kind of surprised that I can't find it. I think I'm echoing at least a part of my audience in these set of interests, so I can ask Jay, but I'm going to take advantage of the audience here to say there are a couple of topics that I would really like to get some good information on. One is local regional, decentralized local food economies, people who want to make it all happen in a region and without participating. How are they working? How are communities doing at making rural economies work where the sense of the local actually isn't a fiction? Okay, so I'd love some suggestions about that. We want to write about that. Secondly, I want to, I'm interested in externalities. I mean, we know what they are theoretically, we meaning the public. Who's a good externality economist who can actually put numbers to things? Or is there something actually spongy about the whole concept? Positive externalities as well as negative externalities, because that's what the environmental movement is all about, as far as I can see. The third thing is subsidies and gluts, you know, too much food, okay? Is this of no interest to consumers and the public because it's simply a kind of correction, right, of supply and demand? Or does that actually affect me as a consumer or as a dietitian or as a nutritionist or whatever? It seems so kind of mammoth out there, and I don't have the tools to even begin to understand it. And the fourth thing is, it seems to me what's going on in food culture is decommodifying, right? We don't want any coffee. We want fair trade coffee. We don't want this, you know, Budweiser. We want craft beer, all that kind of stuff. What is a commodity? I mean, I know what a commodity is, but commodity doesn't tend to be a part of the language of the public when they talk about food. It seems to me the distinction between what's a commodity and not a commodity, and the fact that it's a dynamic relationship now, is something I want to write about. I think it should be on everyone's lips because a lot of what they're talking about is commodity versus non-commodity, unless I'm mistaken, and this is just a layman coming with these questions, which you can also criticize as being unsophisticated or need to be rephrased, just as I mentioned earlier. So anyone who has tips, there's probably excellent writing about all this stuff already, and I'd love to know about it and build stories around it and hear stories around it.
I mean, my reaction is just, you know, every one of those, we have great people in the association that work on all those things, so I can give you a list when we get done.
One thing real quick that I wanted to add on to Jeff's answer to your question is, and he made a great point, is don't be afraid to interview the interviewer. You know, if you think you've gone on too long, you know, pause and, you know, ask if, you know, do you need more information on this? You know, would you want more information on this? And another trick, and I will not accuse either of these fine journalists of it, but something that we were taught in, something I was taught as a person, as an interviewer, and now as a person who counsels interviewees, is the old dead space. You know, they say that, you know, one of the J School 101 is don't talk until your source is done talking. Reporters love to just let you go. Because as Jason said, you know, the things that he said at the beginning of a question are much more well thought out than some things at the end. Like I said, I wouldn't accuse either of you of that. I'm just any other question? We are starting to run out of time a little bit. Do we have any other questions? Yes, sir.
Just if we have
have a suggestion to you. For example, at MSU, we have a Center for Regional Food Systems that focuses exactly on the first thing that you were asking about. Where would I send that, a link about that?
You could just go give them your email address.
Oh, all right.
It's working with the Media and a Connection Center.
Yeah, you can come to me afterwards. You don't need to take public time to with any of these suggestions. Thank you.
I guess one more thing that I get a lot of, and a couple of people even asked me this week here in Chicago is about social media, because and Sarah mentioned it too on Facebook, and then she puts something on Facebook and then instantly gets some information from a source. How has social media, Twitter, Facebook, blogging, Jason and Craig, changed your lives as sources and academics? And then Sarah and Jeff, how has it changed your lives as reporters?
I'd say it's the number one way probably I get news now, which has been that way even probably 4 years ago. The thing you always got to be careful of, though, is am I have I created a bubble of things? So I'm careful to try to put people in my feed that I know I'm going to disagree with, even though it rubs me the wrong way. So I think that way it's changed. The other way too, actually, the really upside is it's a lot easier to stay informed about what the issues are going on, like talking about reporters calling or something. It's always a little awkward if somebody calls to ask you about some issue that you haven't even heard of yet. So it's a nice way to, I feel like I can stay better informed with less effort than was the case many years ago. So I don't know. It's a great tool for, for lack of a better word, self-promotion. I publish this paper, you put it out there, your colleagues can immediately see it. Sometimes you'll, get some interest of other people that want to see it. So that's totally different. I don't have to go to my university. I don't go to my university press office anymore. I don't, So if I want people to pay attention to something, I'll tweet about it 3 or 4 times, or something. And sometimes they still ignore it, which is why I asked the question you did. Like, it just seems to me totally unpredictable what people find interesting or not. So it's really comforting to hear you guys say that too.
It is to me too, by the way. It was very comforting. Craig, are you?
No, I'm always very thankful that Jason does all this tweeting and have this blog. I don't even have a smartphone yet. So I really don't, I'm not on any of these tweeting or the, Facebook, or I guess I'm on LinkedIn, but because I'm a serious professional man. That's why I'm on LinkedIn. But anyway, so this is the thing is that I'm not on these things, but I wish we had a lot. It's great whenever we have people like Jason who are able to get these messages out and then along with being professional.
So. Colleague at Illinois, Scott Irwin is like the master academic at this. So,
right, yeah, Farm Doc is fantastic. Yeah.
Exactly what Jason said. We get a lot of information. We just keep in touch. We throw a lot of articles out that way. We get feedback. Sometimes if we put an article out, we'll get feedback, and then we'll change the article up a little bit. Goes in print, because we've gotten a different perspective that we had never thought about. One thing to think about if you're putting on any kind of event, though, because your definition, I've found in some circles, the definition of media has changed, and they don't know the same rules. So I've been to a couple sessions where the speaker, who was with Domino's at the time, got up and made the statement. This is all off the record, of course. No one in the room who was a blogger, a social media person, an advocate, realized what off the record meant. My team was in there. We all were texting back and forth. How can they do this? I go, you got to do this. He said, off the record. We're done. We can't do this. We can't put it out on social media. We can't do anything. 2 seconds later, it's already starting. It's out there on social media. I'm calling over the organizer. I'm like, they're like, no. I'm like, well, you got an issue here. And the gentleman was very upset that it had gotten loose. So again, you just have to be careful because it's out there. Whatever you say, whatever you do, whenever somebody's maybe even picking up on something that you may have said somewhere, it could go out there in those kinds of circles, and it goes really, really fast. And you have to pay attention to it. So I had HSUS go after me one time on a Thursday night at 9 o'clock. I was just kind of sitting there, and my phone lit up, and they're like, he's after you. It was Paul Shapiro was posting things that I had written in an article, a headline. He was going after, and I'm like, that's not what it meant, Paul. So I took it private, and I'm like, this is, and he ended up taking it down, but that could have just taken off on us. And, you know, it's kind of a mixed thing. There's good and bad to it, but I think we have to play in those channels.
I don't think I have anything particularly new to add. You should know that Twitter is, journalists read Twitter, journalists use Twitter. Twitter is the most popular tool for journalists. And if you want to, if you're interested in getting to know a journalist better, you should follow her or him and see the range of interests and communicate there if you want to connect, because it's just a terrific tool for time-sensitive news.
All right. Are there any final questions before we wrap things up? Well, I'd like to thank you for being here. I also want to very much thank our panelists, especially Craig, for making sure that I didn't have to talk much during this hour and a half. And Jason, Sarah, Jeff, thank you all so much. And again, if you ever have any questions about the Communicating Out strategy, as you take this back to your universities or sections or elsewhere, you know, please let them know that this is a tool that AAA provides. It's something that they have a voice and help, and it's something that I'm very passionate about, and I'm glad that AAA is as well. So thank you all again very much.